Next, let's explore some specific strategies implementing the preceding 10 principles. I use the trial and error method to check out strategies and techniques rather than the mindset that there is one magic overriding force in therapy. Perhaps you do the same. For example, one client's problem was conceptualized as fear of being controlled. One strategy I used in therapy was for the client to gain control by giving up control. Here are four tactics for this. Number one, relaxation. And the rationale that I gave the client was letting go of control of your muscles causes you to feel more in control. The second strategy I used with this client was acceptance of anxiety. The rationale I gave is not trying to fight and control your anxiety makes you feel more in control. Number three, agreeing quickly to others' request. The rationale, choosing to let others be in control, puts you in control. Obviously, this was a client who did not have assertiveness issues. And number four, accepting others as they are. The rationale, trying to control others, makes you feel out of control. Here's a review of 8 commonly used strategies with an anxious client. You might use this as a checklist or a review of treatment options. While I explain the list, think of clients that you are treating or have treated that have a general anxiety disorder, phobia, panic attack, and so on. Perhaps this will help you to refocus your next session if progress is slow. In some cases, as you know, conceptualization, choice of strategy, and tactics are developed early in treatment. In other cases, these three evolve over a period of time. So let's get to strategy number one of the 8. Number one is go with the flow. The specific tactic to use with a client depends, of course, on the strength and intensity of his or her anxiety. I do not encourage a client to approach frightening situations all at once. I find out which part of the client's anxiety formulation is the weakest, and I attack that part. So if you're having slow progress with a client, you might ask yourself, are you attacking the weakest part of their anxiety where they'll see some progress? When the client is highly defended against learning new material, an indirect approach may have to be used by providing information and, of course, using stories or metaphors. Here's an example. Devin was ashamed of going to therapy. Without directly talking about therapy, I talked about the importance of education and of bettering oneself. This approach seemed to alleviate Devin's concerns, where the direct approach hadn't worked. So, going with the flow, the two ideas here are approach the weakest anxiety and perhaps use stories or metaphors if the client is resistant to hearing direct information. Technique number two with an anxious client is there's no time like the present. In general, as you know, you can design a strategy that allows a problem to be worked on in the session. This strategy also involves having a client approach in the here and now problems that he or she has been avoiding. For example, a speech anxious client outlined her speech in the session with me and practiced giving the first few minutes of it. It's always better to elicit and restructure a client's cognitions when they have the motivation, that is, thoughts that the client is having actually in the session. Talking about the past or the future do not have as much impact. So take a minute now to reflect on a client who has an anxiety disorder and you're not seeing very much progress in the session. Would it be a good idea to have them do a, quote, live rehearsal of a situation during your session? Is this a technique perhaps you need to revisit and reevaluate? Another strategy is to encourage the client just to try. One standard lead I find into this process is, what will you learn if you go versus what will you learn if you don't go? Can be applied to a variety of situations. One client who wanted to avoid a wedding where she might run into an old boyfriend, using this strategy, she decided to go. At the wedding, she found that she was no longer as emotionally overwhelmed with anxiety about seeing her boyfriend as she thought she would have been. Technique number 4. When you're off track, take the opposite track. If I'm not able to help the client modify a situation for whatever reason, I find a useful strategy is to reverse and help the person accept the situation. For example, a therapist who is making little progress in helping the client to modify his expectations of getting cancer reversed his approach by stating, "Okay, let's say you're going to get cancer. What will you do then?" Another way of stating the strategy is, if you can't beat them, join them. So think about shifting gears with an anxiety disordered client. Number 5, client persistence. A general strategy with the anxious client is to persist in helping him or her overcome their fears. The client often needs this persistence to learn new ways of thinking and acting. Now, by you not getting frustrated and giving up is actually, as you know, a model that's a very important strategy for your client. Such patience is particularly necessary in dealing with the obsessively anxious client and with the client who has trust issues. So if you feel you're not making progress just by the fact that you are persistent with your client to try various techniques, acts as a role model for him. Strategy number 6, I call this one divide and conquer. You focus on the components of the client's anxiety that have the least resistance, and I mentioned this one earlier. I tell the client that his anxiety is made up into 3 parts: his thinking, his feeling, and his actions. The most sensible approach is to work on the parts that are most modifiable. If the client has a behavioral problem, my therapy focuses on the thoughts and the feelings. If he has a thinking problem, my therapy focuses on feelings and behavior. Because anxiety is primarily a feeling problem, therapy focuses on the thoughts and the behavior. And later on in this tape, we'll give you some additional specific strategies for refocusing thoughts. Technique number 7, do the unexpected. Cognitive therapy often emphasizes encouraging a client to do the unexpected, to surprise himself, to step out of character. This strategy is presented as one of the best ways to defeat anxiety. Many clients, when given the homework assignment, "Surprise Yourself," will return with a number of examples of occasions when they have taken specific risks and surprised themselves. For example, a 70-year-old man, Herb, who has previously been in long-term therapy, wants intellectual stimulation as a relief. The strategy was to support the client's choices. The tactic was using teaching stories and other forms of intellectual stimulation to get points across. Technique number 8, the strategy of simplifying is used throughout therapy, of course, and as I mentioned earlier, there's a tendency, because of all the theories out there, to complicate, complicate, complicate. One client who came to me had 6 years of psychoanalytical-oriented therapy, which gave him much insight, but little help in managing his anxiety. Now, I'm not saying that one therapy is better than another. I'm simply spotting one particular case with this one particular disorder. She still had a tendency to overcomplicate her problems. Throughout therapy, the strategy I had was simplification. One of the most effective anxiety-reducing tactics is self-instruction. When anxious, take constructive action, a very simple solution to simplify therapy. I'll repeat that, taking constructive action. Some strategies related to simplification are: specific is better than vague, and concrete is better than abstract, as mentioned earlier. Many therapists and clients have a tendency to become lost in tangential and overly abstract discussions that sometimes are not helpful to progressing the client along to reaching their goal. The strategy of simplification helps to counter this tendency. Ready for question 4? What is the divide and conquer intervention technique?